Chapter 9 1 The snows were late, but when they came, they made up for it with a violent, howling vengeance that almost stopped the work at the load. The staircase was not working. Johnny had helped all he could, flying an overheating platform to drive in the pins, hanging from safety wires over the yawning chasm, encouraging the others. They had almost made it, had even taken out another 90 pounds in gold, when the first real storm of winter hit them. Under winds of near hurricane force, driving frozen pellets as hard as bullets, almost shaking the very mountains themselves, the staircase had collapsed. Fortunately, it had just been abandoned during a shift change when it went, and there were no casualties. They were waiting now for a lull in the storm to see what else they could do. It was mandatory that they appear industrious, for it was the opinion of Robert the Fox that Turl would not act violently unless it appeared there was no hope. But just now the driving snow masked any pictures the recon drone might take in its daily overfly. Besides, it was not vital, they all assured him, that Johnny be there. Long ago, the planning had provided that three who looked like him keep up the appearance that he was always there. One of these three was always visible to the recon drone, each one to his own watch. It had even been Thor who had held up the sign, not Johnny. Three watches were vital, for no crew could stand it for more than 2 hours in this bitter cold. So Johnny was not there today. Through the driving storm, he and three others were heading for a place once called Yuravan. The historian, Dr. McDermott, was developing quite a knack for picking up information out of the tattered remains of books. He even had a young Scot, an accomplished scout, assigned to him now just to go off and dig up ancient maps and books. And McDermott had found a reference that said that Yuravan had one of the world's largest uranium deposits. It was supposed to be west and slightly south of the base, about 220 miles, and just beyond and a bit southwest of an enormous, distinctive plateau. Uranium. So Johnny and one of the pilots and Angus McTavish were on their way in a personnel plane. Who knew? They might be lucky. Angus McTavish was delighted. He was the one who figured out man mechanics and got things working. Johnny had trained him and another half-dozen Scots in electronics, and they were all good at that and mechanics, but it was Angus McTavish who was the star. Pugnacious, never knowing the meaning of defeat, a bundle of enthusiastic, black-haired optimism, Angus was quite certain they would find mountains of uranium right there, all ready to shovel into a bag and cart off. Johnny didn't think so. In the first place, they had no protection from radiation yet, so they were a long way from solving anything. But a uranium mine might have enough left around to test breed gas. He wisely refrained from dampening Angus's enthusiasm. All they were out for was, in fact, a scout to find a place to test breed gas. The storm made visibility very poor. The passenger craft bucketed along, battered by the machine gunning of occasional local storms. The plane had damn all in the way of instruments, and it was all contact flying. A time or two, a peak would flash by a mite too close, but from way up high it was a carpet of turbulent whiteness, and one might lose his bearings. Fortunately, the storm was blowing eastward, and its worst furies were past by the time they had gone 100 miles. They burst out of a cloud into clear weather. The panorama of the western Rockies spread out, glistening in the late morning sun, breathtaking in its beauty. "Scotland may be the best land in the world," said the co-pilot, "but 'tis never like this." Johnny punched their speed up to about 500, and the white vast world fled by. He spotted the plateau, estimated from the ancient schoolbook map he held where Yuravan might be. Even in the snow, they could make out where an ancient curving road had been. He spotted the southeast point where the road forked and, down to treetop level and counting the white-coated remains of towns, brought them to the mounds and dumps that must be Yuravan. He landed in front of some buildings, the plane crunching into the fresh snow. Angus McTavish was out of the door like a running buck, his kilt flying behind him. He dashed into one ruined building after another, and suddenly came speeding back. His voice thin in the sharp air, he yelled, "'Tis Yerevan!" He held up some tattered scraps of paper. Johnny reached him back and got out a breathe gas cartridge and the equipment. He and Angus had worked half the night making a remote control that would turn the regulator on and off. All they had to do was find a hot radiation spot, back off, turn on the remote, and see whether they got a flash of exploding breathe gas. Johnny also got out some shovels, climbing ropes, and mine lamps. Running all over the place like a hunting hound, Angus was tracking down likely spots. There were ore dumps. There had been fences, but these had long since rusted away. They tried repeatedly. They would scoop out an old dump, then put the breathe gas cartridge down, back off, release some breathe gas, and see whether it flashed in a small explosion. After a dozen tries, Angus became convinced it must be a spent cartridge. He switched it on in front of his face and promptly turned blue with coughing. No, it wasn't a spent cartridge. They went down in pits. They scrambled into drifts long since unsafe. They used up 5 cartridges of breathe gas. No explosions. Johnny felt a bit disheartened. He let Angus and the pilot go on with the experiments while he wandered around through the ruins. It was all so badly decayed, there was difficulty in recognizing what the buildings had been used for. How Angus had found paper simply added up to Angus. It must have been protected by being preserved under something. Then Johnny started to get suspicious. In all this area, he had only found one pitiful remnant that might have been a body, merely teeth fillings and buttons lying in a certain pattern in a room. No remains of file cabinets. No distinguishable remains of machinery, aside from some decayed hoists. But no bodies, save that one. He went back to the plane and sat down. This place had been mined out before the cyclo attack, and it had been mined out with such care that the waste dumps weren't even hot. Angus came streaming back, shouting, "It works! It works!" He was carrying something that had been framed. Johnny got out and looked at it. One corner of the ancient frame was not charred. Inset into the dilapidated mounting was a piece of ore. It had a brass plate under it, mostly undecipherable. There must have been a leaded glass face on the frame once, for a scrap of it remained in a corner. He carried it over to a rock and sat down and studied it. The ore was brown and black. It had been mounted as an exhibit on a lead background. He held the inscription this way and that. He couldn't make out more than that it was the first something. And then a person's name he couldn't make out either. He turned the plate in another way, and then saw the letters at the top more plainly. They said, "Pitch Blend."
"Look," said Angus. "Let me show you."
He took the frame from Johnny and put it about 30 feet away. He pointed the breathe gas cartridge at it and came back to Johnny. He flipped on a remote switch. The breathe gas emission exploded.
"I'll do it again,"
yelped Angus. He turned the switch full on and left it on. He wouldn't have had time to turn it off anyway. The bottle, its emitting snout flaming like a rocket engine, took off and went about 10 feet. The pilot and Angus shouted with delight. "Pitch Blend," said Johnny, who had done a lot of homework. "That's uranite ore. It's the source of a lot of radioactive isotopes. Where'd you get it?" They dragged him off to the broken shambles of a building that was so collapsed they had to tug and pull at a lot of roof to get at anything else in it. Covered with dust and hot from work despite the chill air, Johnny at last went out and sat on what had once been a porch. A museum. A small museum it had been. Other specimens were there. Rose quartz, hematite, things that weren't from this immediate place. There wasn't even any evidence that the pitch blend had been from here.
"The test for breathe gas works," said the irrepressible Angus.
Johnny felt depressed. He knew it worked. He had seen a blade scraper canopy blow up and kill a cyclo long ago when some radioactive dust hit it. "I'm glad it works," he said. "But even if there is any uranium left under us, it's too deep for us to get to. Collect some more lead and wrap that specimen up. We'll take it home."
"Let's look around here some more," said Angus.
Johnny had to wait out the storm to the east anyway. "Go ahead," he said. But he knew it was mined out. Only one body and a museum. Where in heaven's name was he going to find uranium? Lots of it. Where?